Japanese authorities have warned there is a 70% chance the country will experience an aftershock of magnitude 7 or more over the coming 3 days. In fact, the odds are that it could experience up to 10 aftershocks in the high 7s and hundreds of aftershocks in the high 6s. To give you an idea, the quake that flattened Christchurch last month was magnitude 6.3. Dr. Mark Quigley is a geologist at the University of Canterbury. He lives in Christchurch. And like most of us, he watched in disbelief at the devastation caused by Japan's quake, one of the most powerful in recorded history. He joins you now from Christchurch. Mark, welcome again to ABC Radio National Breakfast.
Oh, hi. Good morning.
Mark, is this the big one? Is this the major quake people always thought would hit Japan?
People have known for a long time that Japan gets very, very large earthquakes, subduction zone earthquakes, as the Pacific plate subducts beneath the microplates of Japan. So it's not a surprise. Some scientists might have been surprised by where it was, but certainly something on this order, I don't think, is a total shock to the people there.
And can you give us a sense of the order of it, of how powerful the Friday earthquake was? I mean, I understand a large chunk of Japan moved 2.5 meters in a matter of seconds. Is that right?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's where Japan actually moved, but actually the movement on the fault plane itself probably on the order of 15 meters or something like that. So on the what we call the subduction zone megathrust, which is this shallowly dipping fault that accommodates the subduction of the Pacific plate beneath Japan, that might have moved 15 meters. And so the amount of displacement that occurs in the surface falls off as a distance from that fault plane. That's why, I mean, it sounds quite amazing that it moved 2 meters or 3 meters on the surface, but the actual movement on the fault was significantly more, and that's what generated so much energy.
And this is one of the most powerful earthquakes on record.
Yeah, it is. I believe it's the fifth largest earthquake in recorded history, in human recorded history. You know, our recorded history is not that long, so certainly I would suspect there were earthquakes of this magnitude, many, many hundreds or thousands of years ago, but certainly had gone unrecorded. So, it is our fifth largest, I believe. So.
When we talked last time about the Christchurch earthquake, we talked about the intensity of it. It was shallow. The epicenter was quite near the city, the CBD. This one, it's not so much those elements. It's just the sheer magnitude of those plates and how far they shifted. Is that right?
Yeah, well, so this earthquake, because it's much further away, because it's a deeper earthquake, and a much larger earthquake, the actual ground acceleration would not have been as great. You know, with Christchurch, we had almost unprecedented ground accelerations. The rate at which the ground was accelerating was up to 2 times that of the acceleration of gravity. This would have been significantly lower than that, but the duration of shaking would have been much longer. So, the bigger the earthquake, generally the longer the duration of the felt shaking. And I've heard reports of up to a minute and a half or 2 minutes of shaking there, whereas we felt our shaking for 20 seconds or less, but of course it was much more violent.
And talking of shaking, I understand it's not a question of if, but when Japan will be hit with a large aftershock, magnitude 7 or more.
Yeah, well, so the interesting thing is that there was a foreshock. There was an earthquake that occurred prior to the main shock, 2 days before this 8.9 of a 7.2. And, you know, in terms of what to do with that data, I mean, it puts scientists in an incredibly difficult position because Japan would get lots of magnitude 7 earthquakes that don't get followed by an 8.9. So they did have, you know, they did have this foreshock, but of course the only reason we now call it a foreshock was because the somewhat unexpected 8.9 followed it. Now,
so at the time it didn't ring alarm bells?
Yeah, well, I mean, it would have rung alarm bells in the sense that a magnitude 7.2 is still a large earthquake, but you don't, because you cannot predict earthquakes precisely, there would be no indication that that would be followed 2 days by an 8.9. I mean, it's a tough position to be in. And then the general rule of thumb is, so if you have, you know, an earthquake in this range, is sort of 8 to 9 range, then you might expect perhaps even tens of earthquakes or 10 earthquakes in that sevens range, and perhaps even 100 earthquakes in that 6 to 7 range. And I note that they've already had 28 earthquakes, 28 aftershocks of magnitude 6 to 7. So it's certainly adhering to that.
So, Mark, any one of those or several of them could trigger more tsunamis, couldn't they?
Well, not really, because to get a big tsunami, you need to have a lot of slip on the fault. Now, 15 meters at depth is a lot of slip, and that's why this massive tsunami was triggered. Now, that slip has released a lot of elastic strain buildup on a big part of that subduction zone, so there's not as much energy left. You got to remember that an earthquake of high sevens is 32 times less energy than that of a high eight, so we're talking about a significantly smaller rupture area, significantly smaller amount of slip, and really less capable of generating it. Less capable of generating a tsunami. If we look at historical earthquakes, you know, generally you need something of a 7.5 or greater, depending on a variety of different parameters. But generally, a 7.5 or greater would, in an undersea fault, might generate a tsunami. So, they could get smaller tsunamis, but you certainly wouldn't expect anything on the order of the tsunami that they've had already from the 8.9.
Mark, I know that experts say there isn't a connection, I think, between this one and the Christchurch earthquake, but I wonder, can I ask you how you and the people of Christchurch have reacted to this tragedy in Japan so soon after experiencing nature's fury there?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's amazing we've obviously been dealing with a major tragedy with hundreds killed, and it's so close, and it's a small community, and the damage for much of us is still very, very real, and then to see that on the television, I mean, it's just, yeah, it's absolutely catastrophic, and it's we actually, you know, we can in a small way know how they feel, at least in the terms of the shaking, you know, the destruction to buildings because of the shaking. Because we felt something, perhaps in a shaking sense, even worse. But then to have that massive wave advance over the country the way it did, I guess as many have described it, almost apocalyptic. It's not unprecedented, and it brings back memories, perhaps for some of us, of the Boxing Day earthquake. It is certainly a horrible experience.
Mark Quigley, thanks very much for your time.
Okay.
Dr. Mark Quigley is a geologist at the University of Canterbury, joining us there from Christchurch. It's 24 past 6.